Here it is!
From deep inside your audio device of choice.
Ladies and gentlemen, a non-ironic opening for this week's edition of the show. I lost a great and dear friend this past week. I had the great advantage of having seen him only last month when my wife and I were in London. So it came as a bit of a shock. The legendary UK bass player, Danny Thompson, who was in his own particular way of describing someone he admired, was a diamond geezer. Geezer is sort of Cockney slang for character or person. And he was indeed funny, hugely talented, generous to a fault, a ray of light. So while we discuss all of the not nice people in the world this week, a musical salute to Danny Thompson, who started his lengthy career helping to form a progressive folk group in the 1960s called Pentangle. Danny Thompson on this week's edition of Hello, Welcome to the Show. From New Orleans, Louisiana, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show. Now, ladies and gentlemen, let's get pseudo-real. News of AI. It's so almost real. You could almost touch it.
AI's great, just first rate. Love or hate, it's the gold state. AI is fine, like a well-edged wine, more like rhyme than turpentine.
First, how AI is affecting at least one Hollywood studio, Lionsgate. They, a year ago, set up an artificial intelligence thing. Yes. A groundbreaking partnership with Runway to train the studio's library of films. The ultimate goal? Creating shows and movies using AI. Goodbye, everybody. This is from The Wrap. That partnership hit some early snags. It turns out utilizing AI is harder than it sounds. Over the last 12 months, the deal has encountered unforeseen complications, from the limited capabilities that come from using just Runway's AI model to copyright concerns over Lionsgate's own library and the potential ancillary rights of actors. I didn't know I had those. I'm not really These problems run counter to the big promises made by Lionsgate, both at the time of the deal and in recent months. Quote, Runway is a visionary, best-in-class partner who will help us utilize AI to develop cutting-edge, capital-efficient content creation opportunities, said the vice chairman in his announcement with Runway a year ago. Last month, even he was bragging to New York Magazine, the Vulture section, that he could use AI to remake one of its action franchises, the John Wick series. The reality is that utilizing just a single custom model powered by the limited Lionsgate catalog isn't enough to create these kinds of large-scale projects, according to two people familiar with the situation. It's not that there's anything wrong with Runway's model, but the data set not sufficient for the ambitious projects they were shooting for. It's too small to create a model, said a person familiar with the situation. In fact, that person continues, the Disney catalog is too small to create a model. Unquote. Any catalog in China, India? Then there's the thorny issue of copyright protections, both for talent involved with the films being used to train the AI models and for the content being generated. On the other end, the inherent legal ambiguity of AI work likely has studio lawyers urging caution. That's what lawyers do, isn't it? Now, again, this. We shared with you recently an MIT Radio Media Lab study finding that 95% of organizations see no measurable return on their investment in AI. Why? Asks the Harvard Business Review. In collaboration with Stanford Social Media Lab, their research team, Harvard's at Better Up Labs, not Butter Up, has identified one possible reason. Employees are using AI tools to create low-effort, passable-looking work that ends up creating more work for their coworkers. On social media, increasingly clogged with low-quality AI-generated posts, this content is often referred to as, quote, AI slop, unquote. In the context of work, it's referred to by the Harvard Business Review as work slop. We define work slop, they say, as AI-generated work content that masquerades as good work but lacks the substance to meaningfully advance a given task. How does this happen? AI tools become more accessible, so workers are increasingly able to quickly produce polished output, well-formatted slides, long structured reports, seemingly articulate summaries of academic papers, usable code, but while some employees are using this ability to polish good work, others use it to create content that is actually unhelpful, incomplete, or missing crucial context about the project at hand. This is a significant problem. Of 1,100 U.S.-based full-time employees across industries, 40% report having received work slop in the last month. The effect, it shifts the burden of the work downstream, requiring the receiver to interpret, correct, or redo the work. You may notice at the bottom of all the chatbot pages, we make mistakes. Check us. Correct us. Of course, that takes time and work. When coworkers receive work slop, says Harvard, they're often required to take on the burden of decoding the content, inferring missed or false context. A cascade of effortful and complex decision-making processes may follow, including rework and uncomfortable exchanges with colleagues. Each incidence of work slop carries real costs for companies. Employees reported spending an average of 1 hour and 56 minutes dealing with each instance. Respondents also reported social and emotional costs of work slop, including the problem of navigating how to diplomatically respond to receiving it, particularly in hierarchical arrangements. The most alarming cost may be interpersonal. Low-effort, unhelpful AI-generated work is having a significant impact on collaboration at work. What's more, 34% of people who receive work slap are notifying teammates or managers of these incidents, potentially eroding trust between sender and receiver. But wait, there's more. A viral app called Neon, which offers to record your phone calls and pay you for the audio so it can sell that data to AI companies, has rapidly risen to the ranks of the top five free iPhone apps since its launch last week, according to TechCrunch. The app already has thousands of users. Neon pitches itself as a way for users to make money by providing call recordings that help train, improve, and test AI models. But Neon has already gone offline, at least for now, after a security flaw allowed anyone to access the phone numbers, call recordings, and transcripts of any other user. It's a Neon sign. Dateline San Francisco, a federal judge this week approved a $1.5 billion settlement between Anthropic, that's an artificial intelligence company, and authors who allege nearly 500,000 books had been illegally pirated to train chatbots. This is in San Francisco federal court this week. Two sides work to address his concerns, the judge's concerns about the settlement, which will pay authors and publishers about $3,000 for each of the books covered by the agreement. This is a fair settlement, said the judge, though he added distributing it to all parties will be complicated. Said an attorney for the authors, we have some of the best lawyers in America in this courtroom, and if anyone can do it, you can. I guess he was talking to the judge. Anthropic is hardly a special case when it comes to infringement. Every other major AI developer has trained their models on the backs of authors and publishers, said Maria Palante, president and CEO of the Association of American Publishers. Anthropic says it's pleased with the preliminary approval so they can get on with pirating books. No, because they can do such good work. As things stand, generative AI and software development has failed to live up to the hype. That's according to the wide-ranging technology report from Bain & Company. Remember Bain & Company? Sure you do. Anybody remember Mitt Romney? Yeah, Bain & Company. Anyway, two-thirds of software firms have rolled out generative AI tools. Developer adoption is low among those. Teams using AI assistants report a productivity boost of perhaps 10 to 15%. Maybe not worth the money. Meanwhile, another recent study from nonprofit research group Model Evaluation and Threat Research, reported in the Register, the British Tech Journal, found that AI coding tools, you know, to do computer code, actually made software development slower, despite expectations to the contrary, because they had to spend time, yes, checking for and correcting errors made by the AI. Maybe that's what Bain & Company means when it says the time saved often isn't redirected toward higher value work, so even the modest gains that have been made haven't transferred into positive returns. But AI is great. And now, ladies and gentlemen,
it's a smart world after all. It's a smart world after all. It's a smart world after all. It's a smart, smart world.
Mirrors can fool the light detection and ranging sensors. It's called LIDAR. Those are sensors used to guide autonomous vehicles, self-driving cars, by making them detect objects that don't exist or failing to detect actual obstacles that do exist. A team of scientists from France and Germany demonstrated the techniques. They successfully made a car fitted with LIDAR, running the popular AutoWare navigation code, to either fail to recognize an attempt to drive through an obstacle or to convince the car to brake unexpectedly to avoid an object that wasn't there. LiDAR is used on most self-driving cars except for Tesla because they're trying to save money. It uses laser pulses to measure the physical environment, but it is known to struggle with reflective surfaces. We don't have any. Last year, a team of scientists, researchers, managed to fool LiDAR with tin foil and colored swatches. Well, those confuse me. This is from the British Tech Journal of Register. The European researchers went one better with a technique they called an object removal attack, which used mirrors of various sizes to cover a traffic cone. By adjusting the size and position of the mirrors used, they could completely mask the obstacle to the LiDAR system. And they speculated that the mirrors could obscure the car's line of sight. The other attack, object addition attack, used small mirror tiles to make the car detect an obstacle it needed to avoid. The car, under manual control for safety purposes, spotted the fake obstacle 20 meters away and avoided the problem. Quote, we show that by exploiting the physics of specular reflection, an adversary can inject phantom obstacles or erase real ones using only inexpensive mirrors, said the researchers in the journal Computers and Security. They said experiments on a full AV platform with commercial-grade LiDAR demonstrate these are practical threats capable of triggering critical safety failures, such as abrupt emergency braking and failure to yield. We've all experienced that in our dating histories, haven't we? Ladies and gentlemen, these problems with self-driving cars, I think, require a self-voicing response.
Mirror, mirror on the cone, please leave my smart car alone. Mirror, mirror on the curb, don't distort and don't disturb.
Mirror, mirror on the light, don't mess my way home tonight. Mirror, mirror on the pole, don't direct me to the hole.
Mirror, mirror on the sign, don't reflect, and please don't shine. Mirror, mirror in the street, don't jar me out of my seat.
Mirror, mirror in the sky, hope my wheels can see that high. Mirror, mirror, glass or chrome, you know what? I'll just stay home.
Even though you say you need me, I just stand down getting bored. Cause no one needs a dealer, just looking dead before the score. Let me in, let me in, let me in, sweet dealer. Let me in your game, let me in, let me in, let me in, sweet dealer. Let me in your game. You spend your whole life holding down that telephone to bed. Can't get to sleep trying to remember what you said. You come around almost every day. Tell me what you can. What you see is what you get. Catch it if you can. Let me in. Let me in. Let me in, sweet dealer. Let me in your game. Let me in. Let me in. Let me in. Oh, let me in. Come on, come on, dealer. Let me in your game. Let me in, 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 let me in. Ooh, I wanna let me in.
ladies and gentlemen. Some good news of the warm, won't you? It's about time.
Soft, listen to the warm. We can listen to the warm.
Here's an example of when getting fatter is better. Average tree size across the Amazon has increased by 3.2% every decade. That's consistent with rising carbon dioxide levels, according to a new study published in Nature Plants. Get those animals out of nature. The new research by a global team of tropical forest scientists shows that the average size of trees in Amazon forests has increased over recent decades. The team of almost 100 researchers monitored the size of trees in 188 permanent plots. Sounds like Netflix. And discovered that the increase has continued for at least 30 years. The study is the result of an international partnership. More than 60 universities in South America, UK, and beyond. There's something beyond the UK, including universities of Birmingham, Bristol, and Leeds. Co-author of the study, Professor Beatrice Maramon, coordinated much of the Brazilian data collection in northern Amazonia, said, "This is a good news story. We regularly hear how climate change and fragmentation is threatening Amazonian forests, but meanwhile the trees in intact forests have grown bigger. Even the largest trees have continued to thrive despite these threats." The study found that both large and smaller trees have increased in size, consistent with benefiting from fertilization by the increased carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. So, our loss is their gain. Congratulations, trees. You win again. And now a little news of our freedom-loving friends in Saudi Arabia, the land of 4,000 princes. A Florida retiree has been convicted of cyber crimes, blocked from leaving Saudi Arabia until next year over social media posts he wrote that were critical of the crown prince. That's Prince Bonesaw to you and me. This is according to the man's son, Saad Al-Mahdi, 75 years old, was found guilty of distributing online content that undermines public order. Sounds increasingly familiar to those of us in the good old USA, doesn't it? This is according to a ruling provided by his son. The conviction, which has not been previously reported, according to the AP, carries a 3-year sentence but spares Al-Mahdi additional prison time after he spent more than a year behind bars after his arrest in 2021. But it does block Al-Mahdi from leaving the kingdom until March. The Saudi government didn't respond to a request for comment, doesn't recognize dual citizenship, and regularly rejects criticism of its actions. And that, of course, sets it apart from more advanced countries like, Sweden. News of the land of 4,000 princes. And now, news of the Olympic movement. Produced by Jim Ebersole III. Well, this is kind of a counterpoint to the fattening of Amazonian trees. World Athletics President Sebastian Coe has said the Olympic sports calendar needs to be re-engineered as a result of the ongoing impact of climate change. This month's World Athletics Championships, which concluded in Tokyo, made headlines for the oppressive heat and high humidity of the conditions, as much as for the sporting prowess on display, events. According to the British newspaper The Independent, several of the road race events, including both marathons, were moved to earlier start times, 7:30 a.m. local time, to avoid the worst of the heat. Water stations were in use in some of the longer races. The show used to be carried by a water station. Temperatures exceeded 86 degrees Fahrenheit for several days, humidity in the 90% range, contributing to the temperature feeling closer to 40 degrees centigrade, Celsius, pardon me, leading to concerns over athletes' well-being. This is why they don't have the Olympics here in New Orleans, I guess. This year, the World Championships were moved to September rather than their usual high summer slot in a bid to beat the heat. But Japan has experienced its hottest summer since records began in 1898. Temperatures 4.25% Fahrenheit higher than average. More than 3,300 people were hospitalized for heat stroke in Tokyo last month, according to the fire department. What do they know? Ko told BBC that, quote, governments haven't really stepped up to the plate on the issue of tackling the climate crisis. He suggested that the onus would fall on governing bodies to adapt and adjust the sporting calendar. Quote, I can't see beyond the inevitability of having us collectively, as Olympic sports and probably the Olympic movement, really re-engineering what the international calendar looks like, said Ko. Continuing, I'm not sure that we can go on asking some of our endurance-based athletes to be competing at times of the year which are really going to hit their performances and are probably putting them at risk as well. This has to be addressed, unquote. Ko raised the possibility that long-distance events such as the marathon may need to be held later in the year than other events to avoid unsafe conditions for competition. Quote Ko, that's not easy because you're going even into autumn, early winter months, to cities that are still very hot. But I do think this is probably going to have to happen at some stage, and sooner rather than later. Unquote. For reference, the delayed 2021 Olympics, held in high summer in Tokyo, saw the marathon and race walk events relocated 500 miles north to Sapporo in search of more hospitable conditions. Although on the day of the races, not a day at the races, the day of the races, temperatures in the two locales were similar. Not a coincidence, because it's a movement, and we all need one every day. Well, ladies and gentlemen, as usual this week was flood the zone time for the White House. A lot of events, a lot of different situations. Way back at the beginning of the week, the felon-in-chief delivered a rambling one-hour-long address to the United Nations General Assembly. And this was my personal highlight.
Many years ago, a very successful real estate developer in New York, known as Donald J. Trump, I bid on the renovation and rebuilding of this very United Nations complex. I remember it so well. I said at the time that I would do it for $500 million, rebuilding everything. It would be beautiful. I used to talk about, I'm going to give you marble floors. They're going to give you terrazzo. I'm going to give you the best of everything. You're going to have mahogany walls. They're going to give you plastic. But they decided to go in another direction, which was much more expensive at the time, and which actually produced a far inferior product. And I realized that they did not know what they were doing when it came to construction, and that their building concepts were so wrong, and the product that they were proposing to build was so bad and so costly. It was going to cost them a fortune. And I said, and wait till you see the overruns. Well, I turned out to be right. They had massive cost overruns and spent between $2 and $4 billion on the building. and did not even get the marble floors that I promised them. You walk on terrazza. Do you notice that? As far as I'm concerned, frankly, looking at the building and getting stuck in the escalator, they still haven't finished the job. They still haven't finished. That was years ago. The project was so corrupt that Congress actually asked me to testify before them on the tremendous waste of money, because it turned out that they had no idea what it was, but they knew it was anywhere between $2 and $4 billion, as opposed to $500 million with a guarantee. But they had no idea, and I said it cost much more than $5 billion. Unfortunately, many things in the United Nations are happening just like that, but on an even much bigger scale, much, much bigger. Very sad to see.
Just a note, a preview of the apologies of the week. The United Nations was shocked, according to a spokesperson, when a Fox News host called for the world body to be bombed over the president's difficulties with an escalator and a teleprompter. Jesse Waters had privately apologized to UN Global Communications Chief Melissa Fleming after the UN contacted Fox News about the remarks he made in a Tuesday broadcast. Fox News did not immediately respond to a request for comment. Quote, "There's nothing funny or ironic in calling for the bombing, the gassing, the destruction of this building," said a UN spokesperson. "We know painfully the reality of what happens when threats are made against the UN. We lost friends in Baghdad, the rubble of the building in Algiers where the UN was bombed." Waters made the remarks while discussing that address you heard when Trump complained about an elevator that had stopped shortly after he stepped onto it. Sorry, it was an escalator, actually. "And a teleprompter that did not work. What we need to do is either leave the UN or we need to bomb it," said Waters on Fox News. "Maybe gas it. We need to destroy it." The UN has said the escalator abruptly stopped after Trump and First Lady Melania stepped on it, likely because a White House videographer accidentally triggered a safety mechanism. Trump's issues with the teleprompter, a UN official said it was being operated by the White House.
Napoleon's hat, Tommy Cooper, the Fez. When I go out, the kids all shout, "Oi, where did you get that hat? Or that suit? Cool." And of course, we can't forget a wonderful hat worn by Jimmy. Beautiful Jimmy with that fantastic hat. Hard hats screwed onto your head. I like a hat. I used to wear hats all the time, but when I became bald, I didn't want to be seen to be covering up.
Direct from inside my own head, the smartest place to be. This is Earth's favorite president with another edition of Truth Social Audio, brought to you by Trump Bandages. When you really need to cover it up. It's amazing that when you tell people, like Europeans, that their countries are going to hell, they just admire you more. After my speech at the UN, the Secretary General, I think he was the Secretary General, came up to me and he said, "Sir, The next time we decide to rebuild, we're calling you. I said, I'm the president now. You can get your marble floors at full price from somebody else. But every country has an immigration problem now. Have you noticed that? Where are all these people coming from? Is Elon sending them in from prisons and insane asylums on Mars? Maybe so. This week, ABC decided to put a low talent, actually a no talent, back on their air. These are public airwaves. They could give the show to an illegal immigrant and get better ratings. Maybe I should sue them for stupid programming. Then they'd be walking on terrazzo flooring for sure. But your favorite president is through with suing. Nobody has ever made more money from lawsuits than I have. But now that I have a great Attorney General, Pam Bondi, in my administration, she can do the suing and the indicting and the prosecuting, and I can spend my time making huge amounts of money for this country from the tariffs and the crypto. And as you know, the tariffs pay for the crypto, and then the other way around when it really kicks in. There are very sick people behind all of this, not just stupid and crazy, like I always say, but really, really sick, like sick in the head. Jim Comey sick. Jimmy Kimmel sick. I don't wish these people any harm, but I will suggest a solution to the problem. Jimmy and Jim and all the other sickos, please take Tylenol. Take a lot of it every day. It can't hurt us. Just take Tylenol. Take it from a baby if you have to, but take it. Take it from me. Take it. And drinking some bleach wouldn't hurt so much either. Thank you for your attention to this matter. Until next time, may you walk on marble. Stay loyal.
Truth Social Audio is also brought to you by Trump Cosmetics. When you really have to lay it on thick. So long. Now, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
The mayor of Quincy, Massachusetts is apologizing after making controversial remarks about the LGBTQ+ community and the Catholic Church sex abuse scandal. Mayor Thomas Koch made the comments this week in an interview on a local radio station, seemingly downplaying abuse within the church. Quote, that was mostly homosexual issues, not pedophilia, he said, when the host pointed out that, quote, a lot of children, unquote, including as young as 13, were affected. Koch replied, pedophilia is a younger age than a teenager, but that's another issue for another day. He went on to say people in other roles, such as teachers and coaches, have abused children more than clergy members, accusing the media of covering the scandal unevenly. Quote, the church was not very popular with the secular media, and so they took a beating. You don't read about it every day when it happens around the country in other circumstances, Koch said. It's bad and evil in any circumstance, but I don't believe the media treats it equally in the various situations where it happens. Unquote. Speaking later in the week with a local TV station, the mayor said his earlier comments were, quote, not acceptable. I want people to know that I completely take responsibility for it, and I apologize for it. I don't know how else to say it. I have a weak spot in that I love my church. I don't defend my church in this situation at all. Unquote. Meaning, not anymore. The Scottish Prison Service has admitted that the death of a man in custody was unlawful 10 years after the fatality. 30-year-old Alan Marshall was in remand in Edinburgh when he was restrained face down by 17 prison officers. He died 4 days later. His family has now received an apology from the prison service. After the court of session heard that the level of force went beyond what was necessary. It's the first time that the Crown Office, the Prison Service, and Police Scotland all have publicly apologized, accepted it as an unlawful death, and accepted that the state failed to adequately investigate. Marshall was on remand for unpaid fines and breach of the peace charges when he experienced a mental health crisis. He was transferred to Edinburgh's segregation unit until, after prison, officers said he had become agitated. CCTV showed Marshall, who had an underlying heart condition, being dragged and restrained by up to 17 prison officers, some of whom used their feet. I said their feet. The court heard there was never any need for force to be used, and that he should have received medical attention instead. But wait, there's more on that subject. Dateline Mexico City, Mexico's former immigration chief, publicly apologized this week for a fire at a migrant detention center in the border city of Ciudad Juarez that killed 40 people and injured 27 others. This happened in 2023. His apology was part of a court order that allowed him to avoid prison time. Speaking at the Museum of Mexico City, they have one of those in there, in front of survivors of the fire and relatives of those who died, Francisco Garduno said he offered his deepest apologies for the suffering and harm caused to you and your families, whose lives have changed forever. Unquote. The rare apology marks part of a contentious resolution to one of the worst migrant tragedies in Mexican history. The fire 2 years ago garnered international headlines, not here, and shone a spotlight on long-standing allegations of corruption and inhumane conditions in Mexico's migrant detention facilities. Well, that's where we learned it. Prosecutors accused top immigration officials of failing to, quote, watch over, protect, and ensure the safety of the people and facilities in their charge. They said the case showed a, quote, pattern of irresponsibility, unquote. Well, as long as it's not an individual kind of quirk. And from Canada, yes, it's all over the place. A New Brunswick health authority has apologized to patients who were harmed by the improper use of restraints and seclusion rooms. That was reported by the province's ombudsman this week. Ombud, now they're calling it, because it's not necessarily a man. The investigation began after several complaints from psychiatric patients at the Restigouche Hospital Center, operated by Vitalite Health Network. A couple of years ago, one patient reported being sexually assaulted by staff while restrained at the limbs, waist, and neck. A spit hood placed over patient's head to protect staff from saliva was also on the person's head at the time. Other patients were left so long in seclusion rooms they had to urinate or defecate on the floor. Vitalite Health Network says it is making changes to its psychiatric facilities, so that kind of harm done to patients held in restraints will be a thing of the past. Some waited over 12 hours to be given water when they were thirsty, according to the CBC, or did not receive the meals they were supposed to get. Vitalite accepted all recommendations from an ombuds report, including a call for improved policies, monitoring and documentation for using restraints and seclusion rooms. Quote, we do take responsibility for what happened, said Vice President of Mental Health and Addiction at the company. We do apologize for the situations that have happened to our patients. He was unable to confirm what, if any, consequences they were for staff members involved in the cases detailed by the ombud. So enough of detention facility apologies. Leaked emails have reportedly revealed that Sarah Ferguson, the Duchess of York, humbly apologized to Jeffrey Epstein. That happened weeks after she publicly condemned him in 2011. The new information reported by the BBC has ignited a fresh wave of public discourse and renews interest on the broader royal crisis surrounding Epstein and Sarah Ferguson's husband, Prince Andrew. Ferguson wrote to Epstein in April 2011 expressing regret following her public statements in a newspaper interview where she'd called a friendship with the convicted sex offender, quote, a gigantic error of judgment. I'd apologize for that. And Dateline Atlanta, Georgia, Fayette County School Superintendent Dr. Jonathan Patterson has apologized for what some are calling a blackface incident at a high school volleyball game, which captured on a in a photo that has gone viral online. Patterson said it's never acceptable to paint one's face black. The action is deeply offensive. We also recognize we should have prevented these individuals from entering our athletic facility in this manner. We regret that we did not do so. Hi, and we as a district sincerely apologize for the hurt this incident has caused to our students, families, parents, and community. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. And now, finally, news of our friend the atom. Federal regulators have detected possible radioactive contamination in a second food product sent to the United States from Indonesia. Recalls of potentially tainted shrimp continue to grow, but the discovery adds to questions about the source of the problem. According to the AP, FDA officials blocked import of all spices from Indonesia, one company there, after federal inspectors detected cesium-137 in a shipment of cloves sent to California. That follows the import alert imposed in August on the company P.T. Bahari Makmuri Sejati, BMS Foods, which sends millions of pounds of shrimp to the U.S. each year. Cesium-137, as you know, is a radioactive isotope created as a byproduct of nuclear reactions, including your bombs, your testing, your reactor operations, and accidents. It's widespread around the world. Enjoy. External power to the Russian-occupied Zaporizhia nuclear plant in Ukraine has been cut for more than 3 days. That is a record outage that has prompted safety concerns over the site on the front line of the war. Emergency generators are being used to power cooling and safety systems after the one remaining power line into the plant was cut on the Russian side on Tuesday. There's no immediate sign that power line will be reconnected by the Russians. They're good guys. The Director General of the International Atomic Energy Agency described the situation as, quote, deeply concerning. He met Vladimir Putin on Thursday, but the situation has continued. According to The Guardian, Western experts and Ukrainian officials fear the Kremlin is manufacturing a crisis to consolidate its grip over the plant, Europe's largest. And speaking of Europe, France tested nuclear weapons for 30 years in the Pacific. The people of French Polynesia bore the brunt of the testing. For 30 years, we were France's guinea pigs, says Hinanamukura Morgant Cross, a young member of parliament from French Polynesia. That archipelago includes Tahiti, has a painful legacy, decades of nuclear testing, and its enduring consequences, according to the German news site Deutsche Welle. Between 1966 and 96, the French military detonated 193 nuclear bombs on remote atolls. According to Morgant Cross, the consequences include disproportionately high cancer rates, children born with deformities, and ongoing contamination of the region's water and soil is all. French government at the time knowingly gave false assurances to the islanders about the dangers of the nuclear testing. Then President Charles de Gaulle described the French atomic bomb as, quote, green and very clean, unquote, suggesting it was safer or more environmentally friendly than the bombs dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. In reality, radioactive clouds drifted across vast parts of the South Pacific, even reaching the main island of Tahiti, more than 1,000 kilometers, however many miles that is, from the test site. Often residents of nearby islands weren't informed or evacuated. France didn't stop the testing until 1996, following intense domestic and international outcry. But the French government has never formally apologized for the harm caused in its overseas territories. But President Macron acknowledged France's role, stating the guilt lies in the fact that we conducted these tests. We would not have carried out these experiments in Creuse or Brittany in mainland France, he said. Clean, cheap, safe. Too dangerous to meter, our friend the atom. ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of the show. Back next week, same time, same radio station. What's a radio? Ask your dad what a radio station. And available on your audio device of choice whenever you want it. A tip of the show, chapeau to the San Diego and Hawaii desks, to Pam Halstead and to Thomas Walsh at WWNO New Orleans for help with today's broadcast. The email address for this program, your chance to get the few remaining Cars I Talk t-shirts. The music playlist of what you hear here. And so many things to read and listen to and enjoy and ignore, all at harryshearer.com. And I'm on Blue Sky at Harry Shearer. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of WWNO New Orleans, flagship station of the Changes Easy radio network. Goodbye to Danny Thompson. And to the rest of you, so long from the Crescent City.